Institutions. If we were to pause in our daily round, to stop, to look around and to evaluate what we see, in all honesty, we would see a world economy spewing out convenience foods for busy people. People who are so busy churning out armaments, transport and delivery systems for war that they have no time to grow and enjoy slow foods, to tell a story to a child, or even let a child stand and stare at the wonders of the natural world. Take the military out of the economy, and practically all of us would be looking for a job. The fast foods we produce and consume have a disastrous effect on the human body, as disastrous as bombs and explosives. Well-documented research shows that their effects lead directly and traceably to obesity, heart disease, cancer, and all manner of physical deterioration of bodily structures, symptoms which are notable by their absence in traditional land-based societies. These foods, and the man-made environment in which they are created, give rise to stress, to emotional, psychological, and social dis-ease. Children who grow up deprived of free access to the natural world turn into adults dependent upon drugs, narcotics, alcohol, and the products of pharmaceutical companies. Youngsters surrounded by images of sexual license and physical violence unsurprisingly act out the roles, taking to casual sex and seeking to kill and maim legally when employed in the armed forces and illegally in gang warfare. The products of the economy include mobile phones, smartphones, iPhones, iPods, and now pebbles and smart glasses, leading a little way down the line to contact lenses which can be implanted into the eye and hardwired permanently. The prospect of being permanently wired up to the electronic media may seem unattractive to some, but for many, the prospect is hailed with delight. Already hooked on the world of computer technology, they have nowhere else to go. A while back, Maurice Reckitt had this to say about the new technologies, and I quote, "In the great cities, the mechanization of life has attained a culmination of artificiality which seems at times to threaten the very humanity of mankind." Reckitt then quotes from a book entitled Flamingo by Mary Borden. "By the 20th century," she says, "men had come to depend upon the machines for so many things that they were already helpless without them. Their flesh and bone bodies were no longer much good to them in the life struggle of the 20th century, not in America anyhow, and certainly not in New York. No man could attempt to live in New York without the help of machines. He couldn't provide a home for his children, or transact any business, or obtain any food without them. All you had to do to see that this was true was to look at the place. When a man lives 500 feet up in the air and has to arrange for his infants to get fresh air in wire-caged window boxes suspended over an abyss, how is he to get milk and butter and eggs up, or to get up there himself without a machine to lift him off the ground? Stairs are no good to him. His legs and his heart pump couldn't stand 40 flights of stairs. This city is obviously not designed as a habitation for men or animals. Its conception has nothing whatever to do with the physical needs of nature's creatures. It is perpendicular and entirely made up of minerals, stone, steel, iron, copper, and various composites of stone. There are only a few patches of grass. The beings who are at home in that city are made of metal and animated by the force of electricity. They are of every size and type. The process of mechanical invention has produced as many types in 100 years as the process of evolution managed to produce in 100,000. Life for a mere man in such a city is a precarious business. He is about as safe and comfortable there as a tightrope walker balanced above a roaring iron river. Reckitt continues, "We're often reminded that New York is not America, and the reminder is a valuable one. But it is the spirit of America that has made New York possible, and it is many of its aspects, and most characteristically expressed thereby. It is a spirit of great potentiality, but it is all too predominantly the spirit of financial civilization. And such a civilization can never fulfill the requirements of a Christian social order, for its objectives are inevitably distinct therefrom. Its treasure is in material achievement, symbolized by dead gold and all too living machines. And where the treasure is, there will the heart be also." So ends the quote from Maurice Reckitt, published, as I said, not yesterday, but some time ago. 80 years ago, to be precise. Yes, 80. The date of publication of the extract I just read was 1932. Maurice Reckitt, author of the book Faith and Society, was a leading figure in the ecumenical Christian sociology movement in England and the United States during the so-called interwar years of the 1920s and 1930s. He was also a leading figure in the Guild Socialist movement. Firmly rooted in non-sectarian Christian ideals, Guild Socialists like William Morris, John Ruskin, Orage, and Arthur Penty sought to replace the oppressive wage slavery system with small-scale, locally managed enterprises rooted in locality. Craft, culture, and agriculture were their watchwords.